You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we have a very interesting show for you, talking about JavaScript in, I don't even know how you describe this, but like using JavaScript and maybe we'll even talk about other languages as well, in situations that is not your typical web app running in a desktop browser. So JavaScript can run in other places. And I'll talk about that more in just a second. But first, we are sponsored by three awesome companies: Linode, Cloud Hosting, LogRocket, JavaScript Session Replay, and Brindam Products. They're a new sponsor of ours. They make some really cool web components you can drop into your web app for doing Gantt charts and scheduling. They're really cool. I'll talk about them partway through the episode. With me, as always, is Mr. Scott Tolinsky. How are you doing today, Scott?
Hey, doing good. Just hanging out, you know, the normal, getting ready for Black Friday, that sort of deal. So, yeah.
Big. And we also have our guest on today is Anth Rogan. Hi, Anth. How are you doing today?
I'm not bad, man. How's yourself? You all okay?
Yeah. Doing well. We are excited to have you on. So a little bit of backstory here. I don't know, like maybe a month or two ago, I tweeted out, like, where else is JavaScript being used on? Because I know, like, I use these apps on my phone or on my TV. And the TV apps are built in... Like, specifically, I use one that's called Embi, and they have the actual app is the same, exact same app on your desktop as it is on your phone, as it is on my TV, as it is on the iPad. And I've always marveling at, like, wow, this thing is rock solid. It's a really nice app, and it works just so well across all of the different ones that we have. And I was like, where else is it used? And then, like, just as, like, totally unrelated, Ant sent me a message on Instagram and was just like, yeah, I'm working on some like IoT stuff right now. It's pretty interesting. And then I also worked at Nissan I didn't ask too many questions because I wanted to leave it for the actual episode, but
yeah.
He was doing some cool stuff with the head units in JavaScript. And I thought, oh man, that's super cool. That we just bought a new car. I just put a new stereo in it. And I was like, man, it'd be really cool. Like, I wonder what these things are made in, or even talking to them. So you want to give us a little introduction of who you are, what you do, things like that?
Sure. So, my name's Anth Rogan. I've been in the tech game now for about 15 years. So I've always been a developer. I was a developer back when we used to get called webmasters and worked in front page and all that sort of stuff. And sort of followed the languages over the time. JavaScript's always had to be there, though. So it's always been the main thing we wrote. I live in sort of the northeast of England, and anyone who's ever been to England in the north will know a lot of it's just industry-based, like really heavy industry, car manufacturing, coal mining, shipbuilding, stuff like that. And as a result, there's not like a big developer presence, or there certainly wasn't. So you were sort of a bit different when you got into development, and you tended to end up at one of these factories and doing software things, you know what I mean?
Okay.
But for the longest time, a lot of it was always sort of it's like stock management systems, just part booking, stuff like that, part picking, things like that. But then over the years, the more experience I gained and the more things I worked on, it developed into the fact that, like, we can interface with anything and we can build anything we want using modern languages like Node, or some of them you were forced to work with old languages. I say old languages, I'll probably upset some people saying that. things like C# and Java was for the longest time the only way you could do it, but then obviously the rise in Node and just web technology in general made everything easier for everyone, and it felt like it was overnight that one day you were having to use all of these, I guess, bespoke, heavily licensed, really hardly integrated kit software off a shelf, to all of a sudden we can just make an Express app and have all of this information at our sort of fingertips.
Start talking to it.
Yeah. And it was huge, really.
That's really cool to me, because I've dipped into that world a couple times. I'm not by far, and good at any of it. But in the past, I have used Node to talk to a drone. And that is like, I don't even know what language is running on the drone, but it's just communicated via UDP socket. And you just send these text commands to it. And I've communicated with LTE cellular modems. They run their own, I'm not even sure what it is as well, but again, just text commands being sent to it. And then I recently was looking into like steering wheels and stuff in cars. I was just watching a random YouTube video about how do cars communicate? And this, I learned a lot of them run on this thing called CAN bus, and they communicate through this thing. I was like, I wonder if you could do it in JavaScript. And there is. So that's sort of like the kind of stuff that you work on, is just basically you just need to talk to things.
Yeah. I mean, when I was at Nissan, I'm not there anymore, but when I was there, my role was like a systems engineer, and we didn't strictly make a lot of the software for the cars. We sort of dabbled with it. When we made that head unit, for example, it was a little bit of a, we had this innovation room, and it was just filled with Raspberry Pis and bits of stuff that people would donate to Nissan to see what you could do with it. And it happened to be at the time that, I believe it was Talk, a company called Talk, and they donated like an OBD2 dongle, which is sort of plug into your OBD socket, which is what mechanics use to diagnose cars' ECUs. And as that, then that little Bluetooth device would record data, send it to a little server. And that made it really easy for us, because instantly we had a server on an IP. It was running an Android app, and we just used a Raspberry Pi to pull it out. But because it was on just a closed sort of network, it was enough to be real time. So we showed, we had like a little screen on the Raspberry Pi, and we sort of made it show little inputs and outputs and all that sort of stuff. But generally, that made it easier. But in the terms of like having communications on anything physical, like a machine, there is usually a wrapper for in Node, at least. There's 9 times out of 10, there is a Node sort of wrapper for these types of things. But even if there isn't, you can. If there is an interface, you can do it in Puppeteer. We did that quite regularly. Do you know what I mean? If some things just didn't have it. But for sort of the low level machine code, like you say with steering wheel communications and stuff like that, they generally had a sort of communication bus type information, like you mentioned. There's a CAN bus, you said it was, with the steering wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
And then this information ultimately had to go back to an ECU or to something. Do you know what I mean? So it would never be too much of a stretch for you to. You could use an OBD device, for example, to read that information, because it can communicate with the ECU and all this sort of stuff. So it's like, a lot of it in the IoT space is always writing that glue code to fix it together and make it work. Which it can be risky doing it as well, especially when you've got like 17 services wired together to show the status of something. Do you know what I mean? Of course it can be, but in that industrial world, there just isn't another way to do it. In some cases, you tend to find a lot of like protocols, communication protocols, is like event bus and all this sort of stuff that was developed by Siemens and all this really old stuff. And eventually they just stop working with it and stop supporting with it. But half of your factory is still built on it, or half of your wind farm runs on it, and there's just no other way to communicate with it. And I've been in situations where we've actually bought devices off eBay secondhand because there just isn't, it doesn't get manufactured anymore, but you need one. And changing the whole machine would be such more bigger cost than sort of just replacing that part. You know what I mean? And it is a big issue in the industry, but then at the same time, like for the sake of like 50 quid or I don't know, £1 million to refit, you're just going to get a second hand one all the time.
It's funny, as a consumer of a lot of these things, you know, I think many consumers would say, why is the tech in cars and head units specifically so 1990s or whatever it is? Me personally, I had a gig offered to me to do HTML apps in, I think it was GM cars at the time. And I was working at Ford, and they were doing, I think it was Sync 2, which honestly is a disaster of a head unit. It stinks. and I remember the GM job was so enticing because they were like, listen, this is the future of how we're doing all this. We're going to drop JavaScript and HTML, and it's going to be a web browser-based thing. And then it feels like, it's nearly like 10 years later, not a ton of progress has been made in that regard, and head units are still largely terrible. So it's just interesting to me that I feel like these things could probably progress a lot better if they opened up the tech. But again, you know, the automotive industry is a nightmare in some regards. So hearing you say these things definitely validates a lot of my feelings around this topic.
Yeah, I think the issue, it's so, I don't know if you've been at Ford, so you imagine the size of the lines and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of regulation between different countries and stuff with safety specs and how fast things can communicate and all these types of things, and changing it's just really daunting. And it's, I think as well, a lot, especially in particular the head units, I think Android Auto and CarPlay have a lot to do with the fact that they've stopped really working on them, and mm-hmm. everyone just connects wirelessly now. I mean, I think it was the big automotive companies that invested the majority of the money for Vulkan, which is like a OpenGL, which Valve had something. It was like a for Linux and stuff. And the part of the advancement was like so they could have these cool head units in it. But then the only really decent head unit I think I've seen in the past 5 years is definitely Tesla's.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is almost certainly running Node and probably React or something similar like that. So,
and I think the Polestar is like a Volvo's subsidiary or their like EV brand. I know their unit is just a straight up Android tablet. It's just running Android straight up.
Yeah. Really?
So yeah, you can even access the Play Store on it.
I always wonder that. Like, so when you get into a 3-year-old car and you like swipe on their UI and you're like, oh, this thing is laggy as hell and whatnot. Like that is like, what is that running? Is that what Vulkan is?
I doubt it. If it's running poorly, then that's definitely not what it is. But it's generally, it is like I vaguely remember the one that was in the dash. It was like a modified Opera browser or something similar like that. Mm. But it also depends on like the head unit itself. I think like the really old ones, it will likely be running their version of that because they don't have that like capability. Do you know what I mean? But I think the modern ones be a lot more akin to like an Android tablet or a Raspberry Pi or something like that, and it can just run websites and there'll be an internal something. Do you know what I mean? But it sort of differed heavily, like it changed a lot, like over the past 5 years. The capabilities in the car was hugely different. And then as well, for a longer time as well, like you've got to think there wasn't any real competition in it. So all car manufacturers had the same sort of head units. And then people like Tesla came up or Polestar, whoever. And it was like, gosh, we actually have to get out mm-hmm. together now and start offering things that's important, you know what I mean, or helpful to people.
And it's actually kind of interesting how you say, like if we go back to what you're talking about with the communicating with the car and just sending data, and you have like a layer of glue on top of it. And the head units in most cars already work like that. And the reason being is that if you pull that, like I pulled the entire head unit out of our van, and then I pulled the entire heating system and all the controls and everything out of the van. And then I needed to go somewhere, so I drove it without the head unit or any of the controls or anything. And everyone's like, can you drive it like that? And I was like, I don't know, I'll try. And it does, because like you have to like sort of separate like the brakes and the steering wheel and like the like core car things from like running, like you're not going to run that on the same system that you're sending an iMessage emoji to somebody, because mm-hmm. those things probably shouldn't be mixed. And core things that are vital to running a automobile flying down the highway shouldn't be the same computer that's running like all the silly stuff on your head unit.
I think as well, it's not a huge stretch from like, I watched that about a couple of months ago. I remember you did your sort of fulfillment video you did, and you had like a little zebra scanner and your heat printer and stuff like that, right? But what IoT isn't a million miles from that, really. And it's like my bigger job, I mean, the head unit thing was cool, but my main job was actually sort of really visualizing whole facilities. So the industrial world works on PLCs. I don't know if you've ever worked with them, but the little programmable, it's a programmable logic controller, and they literally run the planet, right? They're everywhere. And they're built by companies like Siemens and Omron and Allen Bradley, these big monster companies. And they're just really efficient, really low level, usually run on little like ARM CPUs and stuff like that. And they're programmed in like a PLC language, which looks like an electrical diagram. And they can take like 24 volt inputs and give a 24 volt output, and it's that is their connection, literally a physical connection. But my main role was sort of, like I say, visualizing these massive facilities. And part of it meant I had to interface with these PLCs. And then, like everything else, everything's different and all this sort of stuff. And I literally, all I wanted out of that PLC was a run mode. So whether it was running, did it have a part in it? Maybe like 13 different statuses, and that which got delivered as an integer. And once I managed to actually do that, that was huge, because it meant we could move away from like bespoke systems, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that sort of took the magic off like physical kit now. It was like, oh, we just like interface it. And I've wrote some stuff that was literally packet crafting. So we had to send a packet across UDP a certain shape, yeah. And it would just like, it was terrifying in terms of security, because it would just literally spill its guts. It's like, oh, there's all the information that you need, no questions asked. But like, this is, we spent some time doing it. And again, just like everything, there is a library for this sort of stuff on NPM. So we eventually moved to that sort of stuff. And then before I knew it, I had like a whole, like build, like lots of buildings in a web page, giving us real time update information on its run mode, what fault it was having, how many parts it's built, all this sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean? And it was, having that in the industry was like a huge thing, because it meant we didn't have to work with SCADA systems or SCADA systems, something called supervisory control and data acquisition system. It's bespoke, highly licensed software from companies like GE and Siemens, and they cost thousands, and they're running Java applets, and it's just a bit of software from its decade type thing that just never got updated. And as a result, I just went hell for leather and replaced it all with web technology as best I could.
That's amazing. Cool. We briefly, like the word regulations briefly popped up. And I know that like hardware wise, there's a huge amount of automotive regulations that like rear view mirrors need to be a very specific way. And if they're not, can't be sold in the US type of deal. And so I'm wondering, as like a software person, when you're experimenting with this stuff, like how at the forefront of your brain is like what regulations you have to meet, and legal and any of that stuff, is that like at the forefront?
Not necessarily, because it's not a case of us like potentially doing, like I couldn't really tell a robot to put a wing mirror on at the wrong height. It's sort of hard coded in that sense. And you have like an event, you would in the PLCs, there would be a memory area, which is just a big group of variables, and you would really only sort of communicate with that. You could force a PLC to take an input and then it would act on that input. But the way everything works, and I imagine this is probably true right across the world, is you have like two parts of it all. So you have like a big part of it that runs the machines to build the cars or build whatever it is that you're building. And then you have a safety section of it, which is a safety PLC. And these are like closed, and there is like real regulations to these. How fast they run, for example, is a big thing. So if there's any ever issue with the normal running PLC, the safety PLC would like kick in, drop all the air out of the machine and stuff like that. But what it did actually mean is there's been a couple of times where like if I'm, you know, when we wrote the original iteration of it, I would pull the PLC too quick, and I effectively DDoS the machine. And it just, then you, like the machine's like, and it takes 20 minutes to walk to the machine. So, but then you've got like production operators trying to recover it, and they cannot recover it because I've got a node service that's just hammering it with data. And
you've
got like these actual real world impacts where people can't do their job because you've sent too many parts of data to it. So there was that. It is weird having like a visceral real world feeling,
yeah.
Especially when you balls up your code and you're like, oh, it's not that bad, I'll just restart it. But then someone down the road just kind of did a job, and you're like, oh god.
It must be scary taking down an entire production line or something like that. Yikes.
I do think about like Tesla though, because they do like you can put the car in reverse all that, from the touch screen and stuff. Like that must be like, imagine the kind of test you'd have to have in your software if you could like control the car with
the touch screen. Yeah, you're right.
I actually don't know if there's like I don't know if you do. Like, I think as well, if you, once you build them, I think as long as you have that overrule and safety aspect of it, that as soon as something goes wrong, it's like a fail safe, and it just says, just, no, I'm not done. Yes. It just dies. You know what I mean? I think you can sort of get away with almost anything. And there's only a lot of real regulation around the safety aspect of it after, because I think regulators do worry about stifling innovation. And if you did say, oh, it has to run this way and has to run that way, then you are, and you're really so. As long as the safety stuff's in there, which is like a tried and tested method, especially in all walks of industry, I think you're pretty much all right. I mean, I mean, SpaceX put like people in space with a with a web page as like the interface. So
yeah,
that would freak me out. my software going into space. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think it was the SpaceX dashboard was built in Vue, if I remember correctly.
Oh, that's fun.
And it's just like, wow. Like, and that it does make sense. If you think about, like, okay, we have all of these systems in a factory, a car, or a rocket ship. What is a good way to create a single UI that can talk to all these different, some of them are running on Siemens technology, and some of them are running on an Eaton. What's the word you, PLC that you said?
PLC, yeah. Programmable logical control, yeah.
Programmer. So I've actually seen these before. I was watching a YouTube video and this girl bought these old aircraft boxes and they were full of them. And I was like, what is Siemens logo? And I like Googled it and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And now that you're saying...
Sorry, I mean, just to put in perspective, like how big the PLC, it's like the world's best kept secret. It's insane. Like PLCs are in everything from like traffic lights to heartbeat monitors, the nuclear power plants. There was I don't know if you've ever heard of the Stuxnet malware, yeah. That's a Siemens. That was an old Siemens PLC that leaked. That they're in everything. If you want an efficient, low level, safe way to like build physical machines, then that is how you're doing it. You're doing it with PLCs. And there's a million people tried. Like that's one thing I never did. I thought I'm definitely not able to ever replicate that device with a node service. But there's a million people tried to put like soft PLCs, so like a software version of a PLC.
Yeah,
you could operate the PLC with a node app, but there would have to be a physical PLC there doing the actual communication. But they're everywhere.
And I suppose if you're sending your UI up to the space with Vue, you'd probably want some sort of error and exception handling service. You want to be able to see when the astronauts are pushing the wrong button and causing your application to fail. Well, maybe you want to send LogRocket into space with an actual rocket. So you want to check out LogRocket, logrocket.com/syntax. It's the perfect place to see all of your errors and exceptions happen in a scrubbable video replay, along with the network requests, error log, and more. Imagine having an error service where you can actually see how the error took place in a video. That's exactly what LogRocket is. So check it out. You'll get 14 days for free. LogRocket.com. Thank you so much to LogRocket for sponsoring.
All right. So I'm just looking at pictures of these PLCs, and they take in power, and then they have all these like outs to them. And I'm like, this looks like my sprinkler controller. Mm-hmm. Like I made sprinklers this summer. And
you made sprinklers.
I put sprinklers in at our cottage, and the sprinkler heads, in order to open, you have to put 24 volts to them, and then they will open up and the water will flow through that specific one. And what's cool about it is if the internet goes off, they still work, because the box itself has the logic sitting inside of it. And for the next like 3 weeks or whatever, if the internet doesn't connect for 3 weeks, it will continue to run your what's called offline schedule. And is that an example of a PLC where it's just opening and closing valves?
Without knowing the make of it, I couldn't definitely say, but I'll guarantee it's some version of a PLC, and it'll be running a little arm here. If it's outputting 12 or 24 volts, generally it's from a PLC, and it's based on like an I/O module. So you've got inside there, it'll be a little program, like a little logic sort of routine that it runs at like nanosecond speed. And then when it eventually hits time, it'll say, right, turn this output on. And that output is connected to a 24 volt output module.
Yeah.
And it sends the electricity to it. And that is literally how the world works, to be honest.
just sending voltages. And those are connected to literally anything a motor.
Inverters, motors, anything.
Wow.
And to be honest, it's even better now because I can see it ticking over in your head. You're like, I can write like a web page.
Yeah. Honestly, like this is, you think like, oh, I need to buy a motor that is Wi-Fi equipped. But you say, no. I need to just buy a motor. And then I need to buy a PLC that I can connect to somehow over the internet. Do PLCs need to be specifically be smart, or can you just connect to them?
Some of them, they need an Ethernet interface generally. That's the major issue you find is the really old ones didn't. And then sometimes you'll find to sort of connect them together, they'll use Ethernet and then you're sort of screwed because they've used the only port on the board. And they use like unmanaged switches and all that sort of stuff. But as long as you can network interface into it, you'll almost certainly be able to get the information out of it. If it's a really obscure one, you probably cannot. There's even like another layer to the PLC. So there's this communication protocol called OPC. And it's, I can't 100% remember what it stands for, but basically Microsoft and Siemens set it up years ago. And it basically just meant that any of these PLC foundation devices can communicate with each other because there was bespoke communications events. So if you can't write code to directly interface with the PLC, you can put like an OPC server in that will almost certainly be able to communicate with it.
Open platform communication. Makes sense.
Yeah, that'll be it. Yeah. There's one from like Kepware and big companies like that. And some of them are expensive, but you can get open source versions of them. There's a Node OPC application, I remember, which is pretty comprehensive as well. It works with quite a lot of PLCs. But yeah, you can get them out and get the data. But basically, all you would do from there is you might have to modify the logic on the PLC. If it's a closed bespoke one where you can't like change the logic on the device, you might have a difficult time sort of reading values out of memory areas and stuff like that. But most of the time, you should be all right. And you probably find someone's already done it on the internet somewhere. On the Node-RED forums, almost certainly someone's done it in Node-RED.
Yeah, Node-RED is one of those platforms that I think pops up. Like I open Node-RED.org at least like once a year and be like, oh, I'm going to do so much cool stuff and then never
get around to it. Do you want to explain what that is?
I've got some background information on where Node-RED came from as well, to be fair.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah.
So originally, I don't know if you've ever heard of IBM's Watson, platform that they've got. And that was developed for car manufacturers, I believe they partnered with BMW or something, and they used to be able to detect like paint scratches in it and stuff like that. And then obviously what they found was when they went into all these buildings that getting data out of these things is almost impossible. We need a way to like, almost like a clutch plate for these things. So they came up with Node-RED, what is now Node-RED, and it sort of lived its life as a closed IBM platform for a little bit, and then they eventually donated it to the JavaScript Foundation. And the same guy who developed originally, I can't remember his name now, I think maybe Paul someone, he still maintains it. And it's huge, and it's like really sort of industry, industry PLC, like focused for JavaScript. And I'll be honest, it's one of the best tools I've ever used in my life, to be honest. It's really simple. It means you can do stuff on the fly. You're not like rebuilding a service, pushing it through a pipeline, all that sort of stuff. It's just sort of, you make your changes, and then it sort of gets deployed. And that's invaluable in that type of environment, especially when you're faffing up with loads of different numbers and memory areas and all this sort of stuff.
Node-RED has like a whole UI, like you can sort of click together stuff. So you imagine like when my Wise Cam detects motion, then go ahead. It's sort of like a if this then that on steroids. So it has a UI for building those things, but I'm assuming it also has an entire back end for communicating with all kinds of different pieces of hardware, right?
Again, like an NPM where it comes with its own library, and a lot of them are sort of, like I say, industry focused. There's a Siemens PLC one, there's an Omron one, there's MyScada one, there's hundreds and hundreds, and they're all sort of built on JavaScript and Node. And that's another benefit as well, because eventually you'll find your Node-RED flows will get too big, and you're like, I need to turn this into an actual service. And because it's just JavaScript, it doesn't sort of take long to record it, But yeah, the flow-based programming is also really helpful for people who are a little bit more engineer, industry or electrical engineer minded, and then not developer. That speaks to them more than just like a big list in VS Code with lots of different colored words. Because people just assume it's too hard for them as soon as they see code a lot of the time. Whereas Node-RED is, I think it's a lot more friendly to interact with at times.
My mind is blown that JavaScript is so popular in industry, like you say. Like I would never have thought that. Like, yeah, JavaScript is for making web apps, you know, and yeah. Like, of course you can run robots on it and stuff like that. But like to hear that it's like actually being used in like heavy industry is really cool. Are there like other people who like don't think that this is a good choice, or is there other languages that people might use?
Python's probably the next popular one, because it has, but sometimes I feel like Python and Node at least are written almost similar at times. Python's quite a popular one just because of how accurate it is. So like there is times where Node maybe isn't the right choice. Like because some places, some machinery we use, the measuring like values down to microns and operating at like insane speeds, and you probably need something more focused than that, and Python or C#, or even in some cases Java might be the way to go. But so they're just the best generic, let's just get a proof of concept working and then maybe turn it into a full-time service. Node is the way to go. Like, and there's always that pushback from some of the extended development community where JavaScript shouldn't be used for everything.
Yeah.
And I agree with that to some degree, but honest, 95% of the time, isn't the Node is the choice, to be honest.
Yeah.
It is the best way.
I'll try.
I'll try first, and then if I have to write Java, I'll write that.
Oh, that's good. All right, we got a new sponsor today. That's Brindam Products. They make these really cool web components for Gantt charts and scheduling. And basically, I've been looking at it, and this looks really cool, is that if you have an application where you need to add the entire UI for scheduling something, you can't build that yourself unless you've got an entire team. That thing is incredibly complex, drag and drop and wrapping and all kinds of different UIs that are needed for this thing. So if you need a Gantt chart or scheduling chart or a UI in your application, you want to check out Brindam Products. They are entirely virtualized, means that if you've got a huge data set, hundreds and hundreds of rows in it, and you want that thing to scroll really quickly, they virtualize. They handle all of that for you. So you just give them the data, they'll render it all out. The schedule code base is all JavaScript and SAS. It's a scheduling engine. It's built in TypeScript. The UI element can be completely customized using SAS to fit any existing company theme. So again, you can put this thing into your application and make it look like you wrote the entire thing and skin it exactly how you want. They have full wrappers for all the big things: React, Angular, Vue, Salesforce, for seamless integration. They've got tons of happy customers. It's pretty cool. I'm really glad that they're on for sponsoring. So check out Brindam, that's BrynTum.com/syntax for a 45-day trial. And you'll also get 10% off if you use the coupon code TASTYTREAT in their online web store. Again, hit up the show notes for the links to all that. Even just check out the page with all the examples. They have hundreds of different examples on here of different ways you can use it. Thank you, Brindam Products, for sponsoring.
So let's say you were coming at this as somebody who's all of a sudden like, wait, I can work with this kind of stuff. Do you have any personal recommendations on resources or links?
How do you learn
for
this?
People? Yeah, YouTube channel. Is there anything that you consume to learn more about this kind of tech? Because it's all very interesting, but very overwhelming at the same time.
That I think that is its biggest issue, is it isn't easy to get into. These PLCs, for example, some of them are thousands and thousands of pounds worth of kit. Like, you can't just put one in your house. You know what I mean? It doesn't even, like, you can't plug it in. It needs like special power, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And as a result, accessibility is almost impossible. Unless you're in that environment, it's impossible. But just in terms of like physical automation, getting Node to make your garage door open, or you know, then Node-RED 110%. That forum in Node-RED is unbelievable. Like, I personally know some of the automation engineers who were in there. Like, I've worked with them personally, and they're some of the best engineers I've ever worked with in my life. So it is a massive resource, and it's filled with that like-minded mentality. But then after that, it's the other side of it, outside of the Node bit, is it's electrical. So that being an electrician is helpful, or
yeah,
at least knowing how not to get electrocuted is helpful. So things like that. But there is a load of different types of PLC. Like, all of manuals are on the internet and stuff like that. But they're difficult, and it certainly isn't easy, like I say, without being exposed to it, and also like having that, like, I'm not bothered if I break it, I'm just going to try. Like without that, it's difficult. You know what I mean? You have to sort of just suck it in, see a lot of the time.
Totally.
And there isn't, unfortunately, there isn't like a straightforward route on that. And I think that's probably IoT's major issue. It sounds like a really cool thing, having everything connected to everything, but you're like, well, how the hell do we even do that? You know what I mean? So,
kidding.
But if I recommend somewhere to get started, Node-RED forums and ask questions. And
okay.
There's lots of really helpful people on there.
Yeah, I'm sure just typing PLC into YouTube as well will fire up.
Yeah.
PLC JavaScript, PLC Node. I'm sure somebody's done something.
Yeah, PLC on Reddit as well. That's pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Still, even then, I think Node-RED forums probably is super helpful.
Mm.
So if we go back to the Nissan head units, I don't even think, like, what were you actually doing with the head units in JavaScript?
Nothing.
Just nothing.
Literally using it. I had the idea that what I wanted to do was, like, capture the air as you drove the car. So it was sort of like, oh, it's a delivery van. Let's just say, for example. And you want to measure, like, your miles per gallon and, I don't know. Miles per gallon, how did they break the speed limit? Things like that, right?
Yeah.
But you didn't want to have to like put a little 4G dongle in or anything like that. So it would just sort of capture the information as the vehicle moved. And then as you got to like a depot, it would offload that information and put it in a database and then just like display it in Grafana and it would just give you that stat. So that was like the idea I was sort of going for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I've got like the attention span of a goldfish. So once I realized I could interface with it, I could get that information. I was like, indeed, I'm not really that bothered about doing it.
And I
never pushed on with it. But it's insane to me that these things don't already exist. Like, I can't see the metrics of me car drive, me vehicle journey, even on like Google Maps. Like, why isn't it capturing these metrics? You know what I mean? Like, what is the issue? But I don't know. It's insane. I think they probably will in the future, but. It was more just like you see that in them types of industries, obviously they're always like striving for innovation and
you get
incentivized to get it. So they used to put these spaces in for you to mess around in, spend some time. But like as well, I was like one of six systems engineers in a plant of like 6,000 people. So
wow,
I didn't have a lot of spare time to go and mess around with.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even a full car. That was the worst thing. It wasn't even a full. It was just a dashboard on a jig. In an office room, so
I've
been thinking about that myself. I was looking into the web Bluetooth API the other day because generally when you want to be able to interface with these things and put them in the web browser, you have to run like a node server in between them. So the node server will talk to the hardware. In my case, when I was doing the talking to the drone, I built this little node service and it just talked via UDP to the drone and it gave us information about how high it was, the battery level, roll, tilt, and yaw, which is the three axes. And then you basically just receive that data in node and then hot potato it over a WebSocket or something like that to the browser and in the browser you can display it. And I was looking the other day at web Bluetooth because I have one of those OBD2 dongles and it's Bluetooth and I can connect an app and see car codes and things like that. But I was like, it wouldn't be cool to like connect directly to this thing from the web browser. So I didn't have to build an intermediary service, but web Bluetooth is very far away from being stable or in all the browsers yet. So maybe soon.
I think everyone sort of thought Bluetooth was one day just going to disappear. And it's even in its like fifth iteration, it's still not the greatest.
No, that's
connection
awful.
It's insane.
Oh, it's funny because the Nintendo Switch has Bluetooth for its controllers, right? If anybody gets in between the controller and the system, they just drop out entirely. How is there nobody come up with something better than this by now? I know Bluetooth varies greatly in their different specs, but it's like, come on.
it's a bare minimum level of communication. Like, you have to get so many levels of communication protocol in there to like class it as a controller. So you're like, we'll shoehorn Bluetooth in and then tell them it's working. And then it's just like this is the worst version of Bluetooth that you can ever think of. I avoided it like the plague, I think, Bluetooth. Any time I work with communication, it's got to be the worst part. You'd be better off doing an MQTT or something like a proper message or WebSocket.
I've never heard of MQTT. I've never heard those letters in combination together before.
Wait, what is that?
This is another rabbit.
The standard of IoT messaging, Wes.
MQTT, yeah, it is. It's like is it like Kafka? It's been a long time since I worked with Kafka. It's basically, it sends messages via a very specific address set, and there is a broker in the middle of it, and then it'll sort of send that message out to all its subscribers. But it is the fastest messaging protocol I've ever worked with. Like, we tested one once, and we had it doing like a million messages a second, just on a normal server. It's insane.
Wow. How fast it is. Oh, so that's like an alternative to like WebSockets.
I recently, in one of the apps I'm working on at the minute with the company I work for now, like I put WebSockets in because I forgot how bad WebSockets actually was. And now I'm like already planning on putting an MQTT broker in and getting rid of it. It's one of them protocols that once you've used once, you think I'm not moving away from this. It makes so much sense.
Mm.
It's really, really, really good.
And can you talk to that in the browser then?
It's not. It hasn't got its own native browser version of it. You know what I mean? But there's a Vue MQTT client and server. You can make an MQTT broker in Node.
Okay.
But I would recommend using some like AMQX, which is just like quite possibly the most freest version of software I've ever seen in my life, because it just out the box is like production grade level. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Wow.
But I would mess around with MQTT. It's really good. Really, really, again, it's like Node-RED's go-to communication protocol. It's really helpful.
You
have like wildcards in the messaging, so you can have like, I don't know, staircase one then /hash, and it'll listen to everything on staircase one. Or you can be really specific and be like staircase one step 3, and it'll only listen to that. So it's pretty good thing.
That's a man, like, forget about listening for click events.
Yeah.
Let's talk about stepping on stairs here.
Yeah, right?
That's awesome. Let's break for another sponsor here, which is Linode. Linode is cloud computing and Linux server. So let's say you do want to host your Node-RED install somewhere. You could throw that sucker on a Linode instance. Linode has Linux servers. You can make them do literally anything you want. And most likely, you want to host your Node application or your Ruby app or whatever app that you're working on. You want that thing to be fast. You want it to be able to scale. You want to check out Linode. And guess what? Linode's going to give you $100 in free credit just for checking them out. You got to try it out. Linode, linode.com/syntax. Thank you, Linode, for sponsoring. Our list of questions has grown exponentially since we started this show.
Unfortunately, that's like, I have like 8 tabs open right now full of like research that I'm like actively buying through.
It's so interesting to me.
I've got a full circle web. Like, this is how putting web technology on IoT, and then this is what you get on your feedback. If you want to hear that one, it's in depth, but it's not that forever though. But it has machine learning in it. It has GraphQL in it. It's got all like the mad Node buzzwords in it.
So what is this? Sorry,
back when we originally put all that software in to sort of visualize the plant. One of the other benefits where we were starting to get like invitations from company. There was in particular a company called Sensei, and they were like, "Oh, we can run machine learning on your machines and tell you if they're going to fail," right? And it's this theory of predictive maintenance. And it's like, all right, so what do we have to do? And then it was like, well, you have to monitor your robots. Let's see, a Fanuc robot that has 6 axes, and these robots can pick things up and put them down, stuff like that. And they have like sort of individual turning axes on each one. Now, if you monitor, in this particular case, the torque value on those axes, and then send that data to the Sensei will then run their special machine learning on it and spot deviations, I guess. And then they could then display that information on their app and be like, oh, there's going to be a failure. A little bit along the line, they then also released their GraphQL API. So as a result, my web page that I had Node running on and visualizing the plant, I would then also pull information from a GraphQL server, which had machine learning predictive maintenance built into it. And that we could, like, you could predict a failure in a robot like 400 hours before it even happened, and
really?
All this sort of stuff. And you're like, in less than the space of like maybe 2 years, we went from working with SCADA systems that had to run in Java applets, and you had to have a license key to run it, to like, we're using GraphQL to tell us when a machine's going to fail. It was insane.
That's because you have so much data on these robots, you can basically say, all right, this sucker failed after all of this. And then the machine learning is smart enough to know, okay, well, I don't know what kinds of things, voltage skips or misses or something like that. Torque value, okay.
So, I mean, it was like super sensitive as well. Like it would, like you have obviously on your robot and you've got like a tool head on the robot, maybe a welding head or something like that. And you would have like obviously cables running down the robot, and every now and then they would like get snagged in the jig or something like that. And like they would spot that. It would say, you know what I mean? You'd get a spike and you'd get a little notification saying something's not right. So you would go into the machine, open the door, and you'd say that the harness would be damaged, and like, oh, the harness is damaged. And it just meant that instead of replacing an entire harness, you're just sort of fixing a protective snag. Mm. You just put another, you know, cover up again. And then if it gets snagged again, it survives this time, because if you didn't fix it last time, it would have snapped the harness. So it was insane. So like you say, all of this what we see is web technology.
Yeah.
Come full circle, and it's now telling maintenance technicians when they need to fix the machine, and it was huge.
Wow,
that's nuts.
It took a long time to get them to believe it. I once let a robot fail, and just to see if it worked, because I was like, you know, we're in work for Nissan, they must be paying an obscene amount of money for all this software and everything.
Yeah,
and I was like, we don't really know. I personally don't know if it works, and I let one of the robots fail. And I got, I remember like the talk about it, though, like, did Sensei sort of spot anything? I was like, it spotted 6 weeks before I let it And I was like, oh, I said, well, I needed to prove that it would work. And sure enough, it worked. But yeah, the predictive maintenance space is, I think that'll be a huge space in the future. And the guys who made the Sensei thing, a guy called Rob and Simon. Like they're really cool. They believe in their product and all that sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's the whole industry 4.0, data driven manufacturing and all that sort of stuff. But you know, I think web dev and developers or just JavaScript developers in general, you're always going to be in more demand, and where you're needed, it'll just get more and more interesting and different. And you know what I mean? You'd be building all kinds of things, to be honest.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because we often talk about like finding whatever you're interested in. Like I was interested in motion graphics before. So for me, animation is like a big key point when I move into web. But like based on what you're saying here, there seems like there's just like this huge, tremendous other world that's not even on the visual web as we know it today, but you can utilize so many of these skills and technologies. So if you're out there and you're thinking, wow, this stuff sounds amazing, I think there is a big opportunity, and especially one coming, to really get in on this stuff and be that person, because it seems like this kind of tech is only going to be more prominent in industry positions and only more available in the job market. So a lot of cool opportunities here if this stuff's sparking your brain.
So, I mean, some of the people that I work with still now, that we, you know, we've all eventually moved on from Nissan sort of thing, but they've got like electrical engineering degrees, not computer science degrees, because they wanted to be like a controls engineer or an automation engineer, which is still, automation engineering is still seen as like really physical, like fitting conveyor belts and robots and stuff like that. In reality, it's probably not going to be. It's going to be a lot of software and it's going to be a lot of code. You know what I mean? I think the sort of the node is JavaScript in general is the best place to be, because every company I think on the planet probably needs a developer. Even if you're just a manufacturer, a fabrication unit would likely need a developer somewhere.
Yeah, always been on JavaScript, right? That's the same.
Yeah. I know I keep saying this, but it's crazy to me to think that. Like, we started seeing, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, we started seeing journalists get into code, because in order to tell their story as a journalist, they needed to be able to use code to do graphs and whatnot. And then you see people who are into like data getting it, obviously.
Sports analytics. And I follow like several hockey people who are like talking about Python the other day. And they're like, I don't really know very much about Python, but I needed to display this data. So I just like followed these tutorials, and now I'm building this out in R and whatever. And it's like, wow, yeah, everything really comes back to code.
And now it's heavy industry. Like I remember a couple of years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was at a conference with a guy. I'm like, so where do you work? He's like, I work at an elevator company. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, he's like, we use JavaScript to, like, the elevator itself is written in like C or something like that. But mm-hmm. but those are just those are just like parts that we buy. And then we communicate with the thing in JavaScript. I just never thought about that. Like, yeah, what does an elevator run on? You know,
do you know what I hear? Something funny, Wes, is that my neighbor is in defense contracting, and I don't know where he works, but there's a lot of that out here in Colorado. And he was like asking me about my job, and he was like, so can you tell me everything you know about Kubernetes? And I was just like, oh boy. I was actually impressed that he could pronounce Kubernetes. I was like, where did you even learn that word? Out of all the web words you could have thrown at me, Kubernetes.
I think that every other level of tech as well, like even sort of my friends who are network engineers, they're starting to learn. They're getting into core. There's the whole citizens developer movement thing where mm-hmm. you're using like low code thing. All of it. And I think it's all going to be Node as well. I know we do the survey on Stack Overflow every year, and you see different language jostling for position, but it's just so accessible. NPM has everything. And if someone's always worked on it, you know what I mean? It's a huge thing to get into. And it's not just like them industries that you spoke about. It's like energy industry, for example. Like I've done stuff with wind farms. I've done bits, like a little bit in substation sort of stuff. So it's going to be there as well. And I mean, renewables as well in particular is only going to get bigger.
Yeah.
And all of those big fans and solar arrays, all of them run, every single one of them has a PLC attached to it. And I've seen them. So if you can do it with one thing, you can do it with another.
The amount of data you can track, and even like I was telling Wes a little bit about, I have this like workout device that can like automatically tune your weight like mid lift. So if you're like halfway through a lift and it recognizes that you're struggling, it will decrease it by fractions of a pound, let alone a pound. And then just enough for you to get over that hump. Wow. And it's like, holy cow. And this is like, what, 2 years into this product. So you would imagine once they have more data about the optimal way to do everything anywhere, they could tune that stuff so hyper-focused. But the more data you have, the more you're able to like totally control that flow. I mean, it's just so endless. It's mind-blowing. And, you know, there's very little words you can put into place to say like, well, there's an infinite amount of things you could possibly do here. And if you have the mind that's bright enough to really go down some of those rabbit holes, you could really, really find yourself in some interesting places.
The next level of that really is, you need to drop it by 2.5 kilo in the UK, for example, that lift. Mm-hmm. But also you need to cool your aircon by three degrees. Yeah. And it just automatically does it for you
because
we've got it all attached to the PLC software.
Tracking your heart rate, tracking your form positions, and yeah. You know, it's going to be wild.
Wes is going to have everything on a Node server and see it now in his head. He's already ticking his
head. Honestly,
I can get the zebra printer done. I can get everything printed. I can have it open in my doors when I get within 3 meters of your house.
Yeah, yeah. the very basic thing I'm thinking about now is at our cottage, we have this one room that's heated by electric. The rest of the house is heated by gas, but there's one that's heated by electric, and they run on these 240-volt heaters, which is like we don't normally have much stuff that's 240 here in North America.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, it's annoying because the kids can get to the knobs and everything. So I'm like, I wish I had like an easier way to turn this on and off. And right now I just go to the breaker and turn it on and off. And I was like, I need to, if I ever forget this before we leave, then I have to get a neighbor to go turn it off. And it's annoying. I was like, I need like some sort of relay that can handle 240 that is connected to the internet.
It does exist. There is them types of things, you know what I mean? You can definitely get them. And
really?
What I wouldn't recommend is like having like a sellotaped hand on a little sort of broom that would just turn the breaker over manually. Please get like a like a real switch that does it. But yeah, you can get stuff out. I mean, at the simplest, I mean, it must be hardwired to the fuse box, is it? If you've got to do it by the breaker, it doesn't have like a three-prong plug. Because you could IoT.
It's hardwired. It was an old like wood shop, which is the guy just had like his own heating for it. And I don't like the kids being able to turn it on and off because they could put a stuffed animal in front of it and things like that. So I just turn it on and off myself. So it'd be kind of neat to hook it up to that. And there's so many things like our fireplace, our gas fireplace. I would love to be able to turn. I think I'm still not sure about connecting fire to the internet. But
yeah, that's where I tap out. Yeah, there's a few things. It's like fire, blades. Like I'm not about to get like blades. A smart lawnmower. No, thank you. Yeah, if it's got anything
smart
that can
meat
harm
slicer.
Me, I'm not.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're about. I think if you, I mean, you almost certainly find all of the parts that you need to do all of these projects, like on like some RS. You're gonna end up having to set yourself up like a full business account to get like electric breakers and all the rest of it. It's a never-ending loop of unhappiness. And then you'll get to a point where, like in my house, for example, nothing is IoT at all.
Because I was gonna ask that.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I've spent like I remember once I had like a 36-hour breakdown, and we spent it there in the plant trying to fix it and recover it and recover. You know what I mean? I just think. I just wish it was a normal door handle or it's not connected to Google servers. I just want to turn my heating on when I want it on.
Yeah, and there's like a home bridge. Is that like the main, there's like a, yeah, that like the enthusiast.
Apple bridge?
No, there's one that's like enthusiast you can install on a Synology and like really a Raspberry Pi or something. It's like, I would do that, but like then that's like turning into a full time job to manage.
And then you've got to explain it to the wife and that. You're like, no, you don't turn the heating on by this. You've got to use your phone now and just like, put the heat.
That's my rule of thumb is that everything smart still must be dumb. So I don't want. I need regular people to be able to turn on and off the lights, which like we had one like a security camera that you couldn't turn the switch off. And we just put a piece of tape over it. It says, do not turn off. And people come and turn it off. So, like, I ended up popping the cover off and hardwiring it on because we don't ever need to turn it off. But, like, that's really funny that you, who is into this, has nothing IoT at your house.
it's like the behind, like, the smoke and mirrors, though. Like, once I knew this and I learned it all and I've done it and I've done it on, like a decent-sized scale, it was like, oh. It's not that exciting. It wasn't that interesting anymore. Just the idea of like getting my laptop out and the little Raspberry Pi and setting it up and coding it and all this. I'm like, I'd rather watch the telly. And to be honest, I play like Minecraft and I'll play like automation packs in Minecraft. Like there's something really satisfying about automating things.
There's something funny. Like my son is 4 years old and like he's discovered Minecraft. He can't really play it. But he loves it. And so because of that, I've had to like rediscover Minecraft. And it's so relaxing. He and I can actually play and like talk about, you know, the actual things that make it more than just a video game. And it's a little bit educational, but it's also super relaxing and creative and all that stuff. Yeah, I love Minecraft.
There's I play with my son sometimes with different mod packs, but automation. We play with like Factorio and Satisfactory And like sometimes I have to sort of stop when I'm like, I used to do this for a living. Like,
this is programming.
I shouldn't be doing it in spare time as well.
Oh, well, is there anything else before we wrap this up? Anything else you want to touch on? Could talk for hours on this.
It's one of them things you can go on forever, mate. If you ever want to get any advice on any of your automation projects, just give us a shout and I'll be happy to get involved with you.
That's awesome. All right, let's move into some sick picks. Sick picks are the section of the show where we pick things that are sick. I don't know if you came prepared or not with a sick pick, did you?
I've got one.
All right.
So obviously in our game, there's just constantly new stuff and articles and all that sort of stuff. And there's a little Chrome extension that I use and I read it every single day. And it's, I don't know, you might have said it before, but it's daily.dev. And it just brings up like your little homepage is sort of just well thought out stories and you can sort of upvote them and stuff like that. And it's just, it's saved us from like reading the sort of just separate websites like dev.2 and all this sort of stuff. It's literally just there for us. And I think I recommend the army team to put it on because it's helpful and it's pretty good. I use it every day.
I've never heard of this. This was great.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Super into this. Cool. Yeah. I'll check this out. My sick pick today is going to be an app, one that you might like, Wes. This is called an app called Spotless. It's for the Mac. And what you do is you set up file automations. So you can say, like, if this file has been in my downloads folder for more than 7 days, automatically move it based on its file type or its name or something. There's auto tidying and desktop stuff. So there's automation stuff, but then there's also, like, just general tasks that can run every once and again. I just found that, like, you know, it's funny, I'm moving files over from my old MacBook Pro to this new one, and I'm thinking, man, this new one is so clean and organized, and here I'm dropping in, you know, 200 files into the downloads folder from another downloads folder. That is probably not great. Like, let me just, like, do I really need all this stuff? No. So, yeah, I'm trying out this app, and it's really pretty. I'm just on the demo mode still, so I haven't even paid for it yet or anything, but so far it seems pretty neat, and I definitely am in need of something like this in my life. So it's called Spotless. I've been liking it for the 3 days that I've been using it, and it seems pretty neat.
I'm going to sick pick. I can't remember if I sick picked these or not, but I really like them, especially for little fiddly low voltage products. These are called lever nuts. So if you're doing any sort of electrical, it's kind of works well. In Canada, at least, the way that people connect wires is via these things called, they're called morettes in Canada, but they're called wire nuts around the world. And you basically, you stick your wires in and you crank them down and they're connected together.
And you hope they don't fall off.
Yeah. You hope they're great. They're cheap. They're pretty good. The problem is if you're taking stuff apart on and off, specifically when I was doing the wiring for my low voltage, sprinkler controller, I have to be able to take this thing off every year and I have to disconnect like 9 different wires. So I use these little things that are called Wago lever nuts. They're rated for like 220 volt if you want to. There's some on Amazon that are not CSA approved. So please don't wire your house with these. Get the proper ones. Make sure they're code compliant and whatnot. But for low voltage projects, when I'm just doing stuff with batteries or 24 volt, things like that, these things are awesome because you lift up the wire, you strip the wire, you put it in and you snap down. I just snapped it into the microphone.
I know, it's
you just snap them down. And just it's just such a simple way to do wiring, especially for things that you're taking on and off frequently. So check it out. The industry name for them is called Wago lever nuts. And again, make sure that they are approved. I haven't done any house wiring with them yet, yet, because but all of my low voltage stuff I've been doing it and it's been great.
I've worked with Wago stuff before.
Have you? Yeah. That's, I think I remember watching some like YouTube videos and whenever the English people, they are using them. Is that what you use or do you use wire nuts over there as well?
Most of the stuff there is lots of this sort of stuff as well, but like generally it's all like dim reel mounted. I can't remember the name of them. See if I can find them. They're like, it is like a push fit cable.
And oh yeah.
One on the bottom, one at the top. You go through the cable and you push it in, yeah, and tighten them down, stuff like that. But yeah, we got loads of different stuff like that.
Cool. Yeah, interesting stuff. Let's move into some shameless plug. I'll shamelessly plug all my web development courses. So we learned today, JavaScript, you need to learn it, regardless of if you want to be turning a motor on or building a website. So check out my beginnerjavascript.com course. That will teach you everything you need to know about using JavaScript. And you can use the coupon code Syntax for an extra $10 off.
Cool. I'm going to shamelessly plug every course on leveluptutorials.com. Leveluptutorials.com is the perfect place to learn a ton of stuff, web-based technology, whether you're building static sites or full-on just interactive sites with Svelte or Vue or React. Check it out, leveluptutorials.com.
You got a shameless plug for us? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I'll plug me Twitter at RoganFPS on Twitter. And if you like people swearing about JavaScript on Twitter, it's probably the pinnacle Twitter to follow. But yeah, RoganFPS on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This was super interesting. My mind is flying with ideas right now as to what I could do. I need to get a little setup going just so I can test out these things. Pretty neat.
Yeah. I know, my mind's racing. Thanks so much for stopping by and sharing some of your knowledge.
It's been a genuine pleasure, lads. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks again. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
See you later.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.